Welcome to the Top Gear Magazine podcast, a peek behind the curtain of what it's really like to drive other people's cars for a living. These are the stories behind the stories. Hello, everyone, and welcome to the podcast. I'm Jack Ricks, and in the studio we have Rowan Horncastle.
Hello.
And we have Volley Marriage.
Hello.
And on the line we have Mr. Tom Ford.
Good evening.
Good evening.
Lovely. Is it evening? It's not evening.
Well, it's evening somewhere, isn't it? Well,
it's coffee time is what it is.
Yeah. In podcast land, you could be in any time zone possible, so hello to
it's
you,
like
listener.
It's like airport drinking, isn't it? That's why you're allowed a pint at 9 a.m.
I never understood that.
What, if you're recording a podcast, you can drink at any time of the day? Is this the new law?
Yeah.
It's because there's no windows.
Oh, okay.
We never know where you are.
It's like Las Vegas.
I am currently drinking a coffee you could stand a spoon up in, though.
Perfect. Beautiful. Good. So you're going to be great value on this one, Work.
Slow him down.
So we're going to talk about the new Toyota Prius. But don't run away, people, because it's actually much more exciting on lots of different levels than it sounds.
No, it's not.
It is.
Yeah. The story's an absolute belter, though.
The story's brilliant.
Absolute belter.
The car, come on, it looks way better than the last one. But wait, hold that thought. Work, have you been up to anything else before we get into the Prius? Because I think you are the busiest man on the planet currently.
I'm panicking at the moment because I haven't got anything for the next 2 days. I've got that freelance thing where I just go mad and go, oh no!
That's known as the weekend work.
Yeah, I know. That's the scary part. I don't like weekends. I have to spend them with family and stuff. And they're boring. They haven't got wheels. I've been going off doing... Are we allowed to talk about our secret stashes videos? I think we are.
Yeah.
Well, you'll have to stop calling them secret stashes and just stashes.
Gorgeous things. So, Rowan and I were talking about some stuff and he turned around and he goes, right, we'll just go round all these cool places where they've got loads of old cool cars. And a lot of people haven't actually seen them. So we thought we'd just go and have a look at some... Not necessarily car collections, but it could be car collections or museums, but try and get the ones that people haven't seen yet. So it's not necessarily the shop floor, it's the back room. So I've been off messing around with various things. I went over to Porsche and they had so many cars that we ended up doing three videos, one on road cars, of which they have a few. And I found my perfect car, which was a dark green 930 Turbo with a biscuit leather interior. Like, you know, that light brown, possibly the nicest car in the world. And then we did like concept cars and prototypes, of which they've got a few. And then we did race cars, and they've got a lot of race cars. And then we went to Ford in Daventry, and they've got a load of cool stuff because they've just moved. They used to be in Dagenham. You remember where they used to build the engines?
Yeah.
So they've got a new facility. Where else did we go? Oh, we went to a place called HJA, Harlow Japanese Autos, which is actually a car dealer, but it's basically some guys who import Japanese domestic market cars, but they just import cool stuff that they like when they were kids. So you remember all those
best way to set up a business, isn't it?
It's basically Obsession, but in a car dealership. So they were importing like Sunline and Mines and Jun, all those like amazing demo cars. They were just buying them in Japan and bringing them over here. I'm not sure whether they knew whether they could sell them. They just wanted to have them for a bit. They'd got an R34 Skyline with an R35 engine and drivetrain in it, which has caused the internet. I put it on my social media and the internet did not like that.
No.
It was like, why would you get rid of the RB26? I was a bit conflicted, but amazing thing. They were modifying them when they were 25 grand rather than the... One of them in there, a Z-Tune, was £950,000 for an R34 Nissan Skyline.
Yeah. No, these guys have taken a hobby into an absolute goldmine, basically, because they are just buying what they had in their garage in Gran Turismo. But also... They've all got really interesting stories to them. The cars that they're importing aren't just, you know, a name and a model. They've done really important stuff in Japan and in the tuning scene. So then you get the real hardcore guys into it. And then there's this boom for JDM cars currently. So then you get the American people who just want a very fast R34 or something. And a lot of them have like 0 to 400K to zero speed records, drag records.
Yeah.
And they're all mad. And if you're into tuning, they are the like creme to the creme of
what you're looking forward to that.
It's a great one. I mean, they've got stuff like an S-Tune, which I've never seen in real life, which was when Nismo had their first ever crack at doing a fast R34. I can't remember what it was, 650 grand? They'd got an American guy who bought an R34 6 years ago and has just left it there. And in the time that he's left it with them, it's gone up by £200,000. So he's paid them like 12 grand in storage and made 150 grand.
Who needs Bitcoin?
Who needs ISIS?
Yeah, let's go and buy R34. Well, not now because it's all screwed. But they also sell like 20 grand Supras and, you know, old stuff. But it's just really nice things that have come from Japan. So yeah. They're
Didn't you do a stash in Japan as well?
Oh, we did Nissan Zama facility, but we only had a couple of hours to do that, so that one's a bit frenetic. But I did not realise that Nissan and Datsun, you know, they started with like cars made of wicker, and like I was into like thinking it's going to be all 240Zs. No, it was like wicker and bits of old pipe and steam engines, and they had an electric car from like 8 BC. it was crackers, but then they'd got like the GT1 R390, you know, the thing that's sort of related to a Jaguar, but a road car version of that. It's tons of stuff. You forget that people who are into cars and have these car manufacturing, you know, efforts like cars and they like collecting stuff. So you find all this stuff everywhere. So there's loads to do, but I think it's quite... The only problem we've got is that we can't make 4.5 hour long videos.
Who says?
Well, we
Who
can. Says?
Well, it gets a bit boring.
I mean, no one will watch them, but, you know, we can do it. We can make them. The file size will be a bit weighty, actually. Yeah.
You geek out with this stuff, though. And so I like it when I actually have to find something that I don't know about and have to go and research it, because then you're down a rabbit hole then. Yeah. Furiously typing on your phone.
But the whole thing with the series is just like, you know, there's lots of people who may have seen these cars before or walked around them, and it's always impressive when you have like fast numbers of very cool cars. But it's digging out the stories. So like the Porsche Museum, it's been seen, or it's not even the Porsche Museum, it's the storeroom basically. Mm. But Ollie, you've been there many times too, is that there's cars that, you know, we can talk about a 917 every day of the week, everyone knows the story of those, but there's something in the background which has a really interesting story, or there's a bit of design on it or a bit of engineering that no one really knows about, and picking that out and then talking about it as well as everything else. So there's lots to come, but you've walked around a lot of cars, but you wanted to drive one, so we gave you a really exciting one to do there.
Come on, let's be fair. We said a mega road trip. There's a racetrack involved. You get to drive a car, not just, wear Looked out your it. Shoes.
And be driven by the one and only Stig, too.
Yes. I mean, you were like...
be reminded what a nightmare to do anything with that thing is.
Yes.
In the public art, when the public is involved. Oh, my God.
Yes.
I just... Don't make me do it again. It's
so
really
which supercar was it?
It was the new Toyota Prius. Yeah.
It's a really supercar.
Rewind this back, because I remember being in this very studio where we spoke about it. Was it the LA Motor Show or New York where we first saw it? Mm. And everyone was shocked because we didn't get it in the UK.
Yeah, it wasn't coming to the UK.
But it was actually the most, this says a lot about the industry currently, it was probably the most exciting car there at the time because it wasn't an EV and it had a good design to it.
It wasn't a good motor show.
And we were like, oh, we were really disappointed. We thought, oh, let's bring it to this country, which it wasn't coming to. Mm. How did you get hold of it, Work?
Well, me and Jack talked about it a while back, and Ireland was getting it. So I wanted to do a story in Ireland, like Ireland gets this amazing Prius, and we're not getting it because they want us to have either SUVs or Corollas. Mm-hmm. So they were thinking the private hire sector was going to go entirely with Corollas, or Corollas, whatever you want to call them. And we were going to go to Ireland. And then there was the uproar about not getting the Prius, and now we're getting it, albeit... We're getting the top end ones. So there's two different grades, and they're about 36.5 and 39,900. And they're both plugins. So they're the top end. In America, there's a Prius that looks like that, that's 25 grand, which is actually quite cheap. But I looked at it and said, if I lowered that and put it on good wheels, and then I did some crap Photoshop.
You look at every car and think that.
Yeah, but this one like really does look good. Lowered on monoblock wheels, it looks amazeballs.
And we should say at this point, if people haven't seen the new Prius,
go and have a look.
Yeah, just Google it, please, because
Mark 5,
you'll be shocked. We all were, because the Prius is, has always been the most plain. shaped by aero, bar of soap, you know.
Who's Hodgy. Aero? Well, shaped by someone who is thinking practically.
Yeah, exactly that. Yeah, yeah.
And the new one, it's got less headroom. It's got a small boot. It's like taking away some of the practicality, but it looks really good. Yeah. And I think it's a good trade-off.
I think it looks like a Japanese fighting fish.
What's a Japanese fighting
massive fins?
No, I just think it looks quite like sharky and aggressive, which you don't expect from a Prius.
Well, no, you know what looks like a shark? A shark. A Japanese fighting fish has big, floofy fins. It
well,
look like that.
Well, either way, but if you were going to get it as an Uber and it arrives at your doorstep, you're a bit embarrassed when a ratty old Prius arrives to take you somewhere now. Whereas this rocks up, you think, oh, that's pretty
that's
cool.
All right. Take Premium. Me to the opera, sir.
Do you want to know something else? When you've got the battery charged, 0 to 62 in 6.8.
Hello.
And then as soon as the battery isn't charged, 0 to 62 in about 11. So it's not that bad, but it gets a lot slower if you haven't got any juice in the battery. But it's quick.
Wait, hold on a second. Is it still a parallel hybrid? So is it still got an engine?
It's got a 2-litre petrol engine and a 13.6 kilowatt hour battery. You can get 40 to 50 miles on a charge in it, which covers off a lot of stuff. If you're just poodling around, and then if you keep beating on it like we did, then it will drain the battery. But even with the battery drained, I mean, this goes into how far we went in it, but I drove it from Heathrow to Locative, you know, the Skyfall road that's in that James Bond movie. We drove it all that way and ran out of battery.
Colin, tell us what the story was.
Yeah, why did you? That's a bit of an odd journey.
What are you doing?
Well, I wanted to qualify. I tried to qualify to be an Uber driver, an actual Uber driver, because I assumed that being an Uber driver was like an online form and you just send them a fiver.
Yeah,
and then
I thought you just went to Uber.com and it said, would you like to be a driver? Yes or no? Yes. Done.
Yeah, that's what I thought it was.
And then they did a background check.
Yeah. And then it's like, no. It turns out that Uber have sort of modified their rules a bit now, so it's not quite the Wild West that it used to be. Like, you can't be a bank robber and become an Uber driver. You actually have to get a private hire license from a licensed council, which involves a medical. You have to take a driving test, and and you have to pay 480 quid, which was the bit that Jack just went,
big
no.
480 quid? Come on, we basically do a Christmas party for that.
That's exactly, it was like, no, you're not allowed to do that. And I was like, that's quite a good side hustle for when, like, motoring journalism gets a bit slack.
No, but also,
if I'm already licensed, that could just pop out at night.
Well, you've got 2 days coming up with nothing to do.
I could do some extra work. Mate. Yeah. So that, I mean, I did a bit of research into what it took to actually be an Uber driver, and it's quite comforting if you use Ubers as a rider, because you have to have a police check, a disbarment check, you know, all those police checky things, and it's a simple process, but it's not something you can do in an afternoon, which I thought you could do. So anyway, the idea was Uber's longest ever journey was from Heathrow Terminal 5 to Loch Lomond. It cost them like 550 quid and a £45 tip. So I was like, well, I'll just go and do a really long road test of the Prius. And Jack said, well, I know who you can take. And I was like, is it Dua Lipa? And he said, no, it's the Stig. And I was like, brilliant. The thing that doesn't talk.
Yeah.
And so I picked him up at Heathrow, which filming with the Stig, we turned up, the Stig got out, Stig was there, and then this woman walked up and went, hello, we're representatives of the Foreign Office. Can we have a selfie with the Stig? I was like, I didn't understand what was going on. So they got the Foreign Office. I'm not sure it was all of it. It was like just reps of the Foreign
David
Office.
David Cameron's there.
International relations. They were all flying
we
out.
We really need us to negotiate what's going on around the world. We need
The Foreign Office, was the Foreign Office there specifically knowing that you were coming?
I have no clue. I just got a bit confused. I mean, when someone comes up to you, it's a bit of an odd It's an odd opener, isn't it? Hello, I'm from the Foreign Office. Can I take a picture with your friend? I was like, I don't know, do what you like.
So he's the new ambassador of Bhutan.
Yes. Well, yeah.
It's actually quite James Bond. You know, you're going to end the story at the James Bond Skyfall Road. I don't know. It's always a bit of Foreign Office.
It was MI5. Really straight, yeah.
The thing is, if you film at Heathrow, you can't have any people in it. Like, we have GDPR rules and all that kind of stuff. Heathrow, it's quite busy.
Yeah.
Quite busy. Has quite a lot of people in
just
it.
Just make sure there's no people in the background.
That's exactly what they said. Also, our videographers and photographers, they have this habit of, like, when they're filming and they think it's cool, they just cast their equipment around the place and walk away from it. Now, airports, notably...
Belly cases.
Just don't like a belly case left in the middle of the road at the entrance. So there's me.
18 cameras are incinerated in the first half
of wires
an hour.
And maybe some plasticine in a box. It's like, it was very hectic for about 25 minutes. But we filmed at Heathrow, which I thought would be a nightmare. It was actually all right. We just had to make sure we didn't accidentally get one of the pelly cases blown up by the bomb squad. And then we drove out of Heathrow, literally 3 minutes, and then into solid traffic. We stopped still for an hour. And when you're looking at your, like, nine-hour drive, and it's going up, and you've gone a mile and a half. And there's a guy in white in the back who won't speak. And it's not a joke. Doesn't speak. Yeah. It was bad. And I put on, like, self-help podcasts and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
And I just got ignored for the next 14 hours.
Yeah.
Which was excellent.
Prius on the motorway, once you started moving, guess does a good job at that.
It's really good. It's got a CVT, which I usually absolutely hate. But it's of the breed, it's pretty good. Sitting on the motorway, the interior of the Prius is not exciting. It's like my BZ4X. It's just like the outside promises much, the inside does not deliver. Yeah. It's like going on a date and finding out that a beautiful girl's really boring. Like, I was just sitting there going, it all
works.
You've been
on a few of those, book.
It all works, but it's just a little bit dull. Yeah. And we were potted up there, but if you've got to do dull stuff, dull is good. So it's got all the lane keep assist and all that. It rained like a beast for the first 7 or 8 hours. Went to Moto Rugby again, filming with the Stig at Moto Rugby. Not the most, like,
hold on,
calmest
thing. For our international audiences, that's a service station, not a new game. Moto Rugby.
It's rugby with motos.
It's in a place called Rugby. He just stared at the charging points. It was just a bit hassle. And people, the recognition of the Stig is still massive. Everybody knows who he is. Everybody wants to take a picture.
Well, of course, where were we for our Speed Week?
In the Czech Republic.
Czech Republic. Where the Stig was there, of course. It was our big Speed Week test. And every time he appeared, was mobbed by these crowds in the Czech Republic. And you sort of forget that he's, you know, what an international superstar.
Yeah.
But also, it gets very frustrated when not driving. So was there
a way that Stig
could be exercised in some way?
Well, luckily, we had organised going to a racetrack because we wanted to test how a Prius is on a racetrack.
Yes, that's what we wanted to do.
Which, Toyota, if you're listening, this may be the first time that you've heard about this extracurricular activity that we embarked on.
They'll see the pictures in the magazine.
This is what it's always about, yeah, because by this point there'll be a gorgeous video and an incredible feature to look at and read, at which point Toyota will be pleased with us.
Because, Ollie, you don't know this, but Ollie, me and Jack and Rowan were having a conversation over WhatsApp, which involved, watch this video, and then I think you need to be ready for a phone call from Toyota.
Because video, clips. I got sent it while I was on holiday, and it was, I've never seen a Prius do this before, where it was going up to one of, you're at Knock Hill for this, one of his corners, and then I've never seen a bung quite like it, where it was going into it backwards, and then with the power of front-wheel drive, buried itself back, and the angle is something quite extraordinary. And also, I didn't realise that the Prius was bright yellow, so it looks like a New York taxi has got lost with an alien inside who's drifting it at 85 miles an hour.
I was in the back, and I was convinced every single time that he'd lost it. You know when it goes over angle and it's like, well, it's spun. We're not going to crash, but it's spun.
Yeah.
And then it came back. And I was like, but how does that work? And it was basically just full throttle to bring the front of the car back round.
Yeah.
But
Ollie's nodding. Ollie's nodding just like, yeah, simple. That's how you do it.
But at that point, I'd be panicking. I'd have my arms crossed over my chest and my head down.
Yeah.
The CVT must have been screaming.
That CVT did not sound great at that point.
Look, this is why...
Or any point
this
afterwards.
Is why you and I have never hit the heights of being the, you know, proper drift... merchants, let's call
because
it.
Because we don't want to crash.
Yes,
that's
because
we'll
go into a corner
more crashes
go,
than you
that's...
or I put together, I guarantee.
Ooh. Fighting talk work.
Is that true?
Well, let's count them.
Well,
I can't remember the last
we're talking about.
Like, I watched you in that Range Rover. I was like, oh my God. If he loses that is the biggest accident.
I did lose it once.
Oh, did you?
Yeah, you did spin once. Yeah,
cut. We go again.
Well, luckily, if it goes in the gravel, you just put it in whatever mode it needs and drag it back out. There is a
mode.
Shot of Ollie drifting a Range Rover SVR,
Sport SV. Yeah, the new Sport SV,
and he comes in downhill like off camber, and it looks like you're doing what 80 mile an hour.
It was doing about 80 miles an hour. Yeah,
and you just pitch it sideways, but it goes out of frame, still on the lock stops.
Yeah. And you can, if you listen really carefully, you can hear, ah,
no. But I talked to the guy that filmed that, and he was like, yeah, we were reversing towards him at this point.
It was all under control.
Changing direction.
So what does a Prius do when it's sideways, bouncing off a curb at 85 miles an hour? Does it like it?
It's all right. I mean, it's got a very short damper stroke, so it tends to hit its bump stops. So what the Stig was doing was pitching it in on one of them, hitting those curbs that are at Knockhill, which are a little bit high. It was going up on two wheels and landing in a four-wheel drift because it was wet. And the wheels are pointing down the racetrack, but the car's moving laterally, and it bounces off its bump stops. We got actually film of it. You can see it hit its bump stops, pop back up and lose grip. It's like if you wanted to teach kids about science things, you just watch it in slow-mo and you can see the point where it runs out of suspension travel, pops back up. Again, Toyota, this is all something that didn't harm the car.
No.
And obviously they've done in development, let's be honest. Like they've all been on a Scottish racetrack.
What was the new Prius's Nürburgring lap time again? I can't remember.
But I could have a guess now, though. It was really good. The car was fine. I think it was fine because it was so wet, so we didn't destroy tyres. It was skill-based tomfoolery. And luckily the Stig's skill level was significantly higher than if I'd have been doing it.
It looks awesome, which is like one of the main things to draw you in, because let's be honest, the Prius has always been the kind of captain of dull of that sector of the car world. But this one looks more exciting, and when it's going massively sideways or jumping off a curb, it's good. Yeah. But then you went from there. Scotland's always a bit of a hard one to road trip if you're going quite far north, because you get to Knockhill, which isn't far outside Edinburgh. Is that right?
Well, then we cut across then. We went back sort of west and ended up at the Skyfall Road, which is by Glenetive.
Is that where Stig wanted to be dropped? What was his...
So I just got coordinates. So I drove out to this... We did actually stop because health and safety and all that sort of stuff, and the Stig just sat in the back of the car all night. Brilliant.
Standby.
It was really annoying because it's like you forget he's there and then you think you're being kidnapped. You get back in the car, it's like... someone in the back going to slit your throat. But we drove to the... up to the middle of Glenetive. I slowed down and then the back door opened and he walked off into a glen like a majestic
bagpie
stag.
Convention. Bagpie.
Sounds good.
But if I'd been a real Uber driver and not a fake taxi, then I'd have broken their record for the longest ever Uber. But because Jack wouldn't pay for my license, we didn't.
I think 500 quid for that trip's quite good value.
It's not bad. Yeah. It's a chauffeur transfer, 545 quid.
Like in London, you go six miles.
Well, this is the thing. So a flight to Edinburgh from London, I don't know, let's speculate, 100 quid, probably 100, 150 quid, something like that. But then you got to get to the airport.
2 hours before, yeah.
Yeah, 2 hours before, you know, you got to buy a copy of Top Gear magazine and, you know, snacks.
I've actually done this.
And then
this.
You've got to get to Skyfall Road in, what, a cab or hire a car? Hire a car, I suppose.
I've actually done this. In fact, you were involved. This was years ago. We both went mountain biking with Land Rover up sort of Fort William way. And you flew back, I think, and I went, I'm taking my own bike, I'm driving up, I'll drive back.
Yep, you cycled home.
Yeah,
yeah. I wouldn't put it past Ollie, let's be fair.
But I remember driving back from that, and I got home that night before anyone who had flown back from Glasgow got home. Because it is, actually, you can be pretty efficient when you're driving, if you
it's not that far.
Got an iron bladder and don't stop.
Yeah.
Well, it's like when I drove home from where I ended up leaving the Stig, I live in Lincolnshire, which is 2.5 hours north of London. So from where I'd stopped, it felt like a relatively easy drive back. It was like 7 hours, which isn't too, that's not too bad, really. You know, it's only a day's work.
More podcasts on the way home?
More self-help.
Yeah, I've learned a lot of weird shit. Like, I really have. And if you listen to, some of them are really weird, but it's fine.
Your playlists American on a road trip are—they're interesting.
Notorious.
There's a lot of drum and bass.
I love drum and bass. And now, drum and bass has been scientifically proven to make you a better driver, because if you're tired, if you do over 180 BPM, it can naturally raise your heart rate, which means you're more awake. That's proven. That's science.
Audible Red Bull.
No, that's exactly what it is, Rowan.
Sam Phillip wrote a column about this, which. He found a press release that had a study in it, you know, with at least 3 or 4 people and
interviewed,
which was, if you listen to drum and bass and raise your heartbeat above a certain level, you become a really angry and dangerous driver. So you think you're safe and alert, you've actually just been road rage waiting to happen.
I don't think I've ever been angry. I can't be angry.
I've got a question about the Prius and the drivetrain. You know, it's one of the original eco cars, the hybrids, and there was lots written about it. And where, like, the Nissan Leaf's kind of fallen away, the Toyota Prius has continued, and I guess Ubers and private hires and stuff have made the legacy continue. But is it the most sensible solution, you know, that hybrid system, compared to, especially when it's a plug-in hybrid too, rather than EVs, and, you know, it just kind of goes under the radar a bit?
I have always said that plug-in hybrids and hybrids are not the spawn of the devil that everyone seems to say it is. And the tribalism that says it's got to be pure batteries or it's got to be pure petrol just really annoys me. So this thing was doing between 60 and 70 miles to the gallon with absolutely no battery left. When you plug it in enough, it'll do, I would reckon, between 85 and 100 mpg.
So is it getting regen braking?
Yeah, it's got a B mode. So you can put, the regen isn't as strong as is in a full BEV. So it's not really a one pedal car, but it still works. And it never completely depletes the battery. So you always sort of keeps about a quarter of the battery so it can operate as a hybrid. So it'll always pull away more or less on electric. In town, the engine's pretty much off more than it's on. They are really efficient. And for things like, for me, most of my week would probably be within 50 miles round trip. So I'd plug it in when I got home. And then when I have to come to London or go somewhere else, you've got the backup of the engine. It's still doing 70 mpg. They work if you've got a mixed prospect for what you need to do. You know, I still think local journeys, BEVs are brilliant. And long journeys, if they've got enough range, is absolutely fine. But if you're a bit leery about full electric, a decent hybrid is okay.
And because we're scientific types and we like to cover all bases, as a control, the long-term Porsche KNS that I'm driving was sent along as the crew car and to carry all the camera crew, to be the tracking car, etc., which has a lovely V8 engine in it. So how did it compare the mpg of
Is that a 4-litre V8?
Yes,
twin turbo.
So it's exactly twice. So it's a 4-litre V8 versus a 2-litre four-cylinder. It used literally, almost to the pound, twice the fuel.
Yeah.
That's maths I can get my head around. I like
it's twice the engine, so but hang on, it used twice the fuel to do the same job.
V Hang on.
12.
12 would use 3 times as much. Come on, people. There's the science. Lock it in.
It's like
fact.
I put 23 quid into the Prius or something, and then it was 46 for the KN. The KN was a bit more fun on the track, I have to say. Sorry, Rowan. But
is that why you said you jumped back in and it smelt a bit sweaty?
I got told to smell. I had a third party first. They said, oh, who's been your car? I said, I don't know. But they said, it smells awfully sweaty.
By the way, there's something about your back axle that's wrong.
Someone else has mentioned that too.
Are we still talking about the KN, or is that a euphemism?
It's the KN. Something about your back axle that is slightly off, and I can't work out what it was, because I only drove it for like 10 minutes.
I said this to Ollie. It's got a weird shimmy to it, doesn't it?
Yes, it has.
Yeah, and like a lateral movement. And
is
I
it
didn't
the
know
rear
whether
steer?
Well, the rear. I did discuss this with Chief Car Tester Ollie Madge when we were in Newbury too. But I'm still not sure, because the rear tyres are so wide too. But someone else driven it and said there's something wrong with the rear axle too.
I've driven quite a few KNs and none of them have done that. I would have that checked before the back axle falls off.
Okay.
At speed.
Now it's done the knock hill test.
Just get under there with your spanner and tighten it up.
Well, it's actually going in for a bit of Wookieeism soon for a roof tent and some off-road tyres for an adventure I'm going on. In Scotland.
So
again.
Derivative.
Yeah.
Have you seen my BZ4X? My BZ4X had some rally stripes. It's the coolest thing in the world. And it's a BZ4X, which is generally about as exciting as Mogadon.
Yeah, so now you've taken what you were saying about Toyotas being interesting from the outside and deathly dull from the inside. You've taken that to an even more extreme by striping it up.
Isn't it a mad manufacturer where you've got Supras and GR Yaris's at one end and then Corollas, whatever yours is called.
B247892X.
At the other end. And yeah, it's the spread is pretty vast, but the fun is really at one end, but hopefully this Prius does another job. But it was quite the adventure that you went on. Yeah. Is it the best Uber drive you've been on? Was anyone sick in the back? That's like 50 quid, isn't it? That's how it's getting.
I got close. Oh, my God. You know when you're fine for one lap, and then halfway around the second lap when you're not driving, you go...
Just a switch flicks, doesn't it? And it's the sick switch.
Well, it's that thing where the Stig... like brakes like an F1 driver, so he goes right up to the corner and then does all of the braking.
To be fair, I've been in quite a few Ubers who brake like that on the Streatham High Road.
And then pitches it, and you are convinced you're not going to make it round the corner. And then when you do it, it's fine.
To Wandsworth roundabout, yeah.
Honestly, I think the new Prius is really, really good. It's a shame that we're only getting the really expensive one, but I think it is the best one. I think the best one is the FEV, the plug-in, but it's quite expensive. It's a worse Uber, much better car.
Well, there we go. The world's most unnecessarily forensic
extravagant.
And extravagant review of the new, quite good-looking Toyota Prius. Thank you, Wook, for taking on that scientific experiment and putting up with the
Stig. There's a video, should be live now, I guess, on YouTube. It's all in the latest magazine, which is across Apple News Plus. And if you have any questions, Wook, they can get you on Instagram, Twitter, anywhere like that if they want to ask about
listeners. I have nothing better to do, Rowan.
You've got 2 days. You've got 2 days.
I've got a whole 2 days.
On social media or just go to Lincolnshire. You'll see him around.
Look at this jacket. BZ4X.
All right. Thanks for listening. Catch you on the next one. Bye.
Big up.
Thank you for listening to the Top Gear Magazine podcast. Hope you enjoyed that. And don't forget to subscribe, to leave us a review, to leave us a star rating.
But also check out what is in the rest of the feed, because as well as interviews, we've got our monthly behind the curtain look into the issues that we make. And also there's some new audio tidbits coming. So, like Jack says, subscribe.